Blog Talk Radio.
Well, hello, listeners. Welcome to the third episode of my talking blog. I'm broadcasting this from Belmore, New York. It's Sunday, June 14, 2020, and it's a gorgeous day in Belmore. My name is Linda Gianos. I'm the author of 40 Years of PMS. One of my reviewers on Amazon gave me the nickname Notorious LGN, so feel free to call me that as well. Today's blog talk is about tying the knot of marriage. Now, I want to ask you to give yourselves permission to laugh. You deserve it. We've all been through some tough times. 18 days after the 9/11 terrorist attack, Saturday Night Live was scheduled to open its season, live from New York, where the horrible World Trade Center was demolished. It was a delicate issue to have a comedy program at that tragic time when all of New Yorkers were so heartbroken. So the director, Lorne Michaels, invited the mayor of New York City to the show and asked for permission to be funny. The mayor replied, "Why start now?" Was a great moment. If you're tuning in for the first time, episodes 1 and 2 are archived so you can binge listen. Episode 1 was about my being a wild child of the Woodstock generation, and episode 2 is about forming the basis for a meaningful career and relationship. Episode 3 today is a lot about marriage and weddings. Well, you may not be married, or you may have been married and you're not married anymore, but I'm sure you know someone who's married, and I'm sure you've been to a wedding. So there will be something in this to relate to. I'm going to start by reading a passage. Quote, "We went to the town hall to apply for our marriage license. In the entranceway, there was a directory with a list of activities that required licensing, including marriage and games of chance. What really gave me misgivings was the fact that the same town clerk's office issued licenses for dog ownership and marriage. A resident could register his or her dog and spouse on the same day. We applied for our license to wed," end of quote. Yeah, marriage and games of chance. In a way, they're kind of the same. We never know what we're going to get. Now, we were licensed to be wed. Now, if you've been listening, you would not expect that I had a conventional engagement, a conventional wedding, or a conventional honeymoon. And you would be correct. Here are some of the things I rejected. Waiting for a marriage proposal, an engagement ring, a bachelor party for my husband, which I wouldn't have given him anyway, but a bridal gown, a veil, and a romantic honeymoon. So I'm going to take them one by one. I told my husband that I wanted to marry him. Demure has never been an adjective to describe me. But then it turns out that my mother asked my father to marry her. So in a way, it was traditional. I was following a tradition. I didn't expect an engagement ring, and I sure as heck didn't get one. We did everything on the cheap, including buying our wedding bands from a discount store which no longer exists called Consumers Distributing. It was like buying the rings at Costco. In retrospect, I wish I had a romantic story to tell of my husband picking the perfect time and place to pop the question and presenting me with the family heirloom diamond ring. Didn't happen. I rejected the idea of Nick having a bachelor party. I thought it was outrageous for men to go out and carouse and celebrate the last nights of freedom. The comedian Russell Brand, who was briefly married to Katy Perry, had a stand-up comedy bit about monogamy. He pointed out that monogamy is just one more partner than a celibate monk has. Hearing that gives some perspective and insight into why his marriage only lasted 14 months. But don't fret, Katy Perry married Orlando Bloom and they're expecting a baby. So yes, I am up on my celebrity gossip. This is mainly because my husband and I watch the news at 6:30, senior style, eating dinner on folding snack tables. Access Hollywood with Mario Lopez comes on right after it, and I get to hear a few stories until my husband Nick realizes and asks, "Why are we watching this?" It's a guilty pleasure. But guilty pleasures brings me back to men going out and behaving badly. This was before women began to have bachelorette parties so that they could have equal opportunity misbehaving. One of our friends came up with a solution. She threw a couples party for us with outrageous props and games, and in that way, the problem was solved. I rejected a lavish wedding. The size of weddings can be cultural. I have clients from India who show me pictures of their weddings with 300 guests. By U.S. standards, that's a large wedding. Within the United States, standards differ. My husband has family from the Midwest, and when we attended one wedding out there, his aunt told us to hold on to our same plate the whole night because she was being charged by the plate. When that aunt came to our wedding, she thought the cocktail hour was the reception and was shocked to find out there would be a sit-down dinner after it. But that's not to say that our wedding was anything fancy by New York standards. We went to one New York wedding where we were entertained and fed all night. The cocktail hour was 2 hours. The sit-down dinner went on for hours. And at midnight, the doors opened up to the lavish Viennese dessert table. When we left at 2 a.m., we were handed a newspaper and a bagel for breakfast, just in case we were still hungry. And I had sworn off eating for a week. What I wanted was a simple ceremony followed by cake and champagne. But my parents were the ones who pushed for a bigger venue where they could host their friends more comfortably. I was never on board, so everything got short shrift. I chose the second catering hall we visited because they gave us a great deal. Why? Because it was under renovation, and they promised the work would be completed by the time of our wedding. Predictably, it was not completed, and our guests had to walk in the front door under scaffolding. I chose the second gown I tried on. I thought it was dramatic because that bottom had handkerchief points, and I imagined Stevie Nicks running across the stage with handkerchief points flowing behind her, singing Rhiannon. It was actually a bridesmaid dress, which was curious because it was white, and usually I don't think the bridesmaid wears white. But anyway, the seamstress, who was altering it to make it fit better, decided to re-envision the dress. She painstakingly turned the handkerchief points by hemming them into rounded scallops, which she thought would make a more appropriate bridal gown. I was so upset when I came to pick up the dress that I made her take out all that hemming and restore the points. I didn't want to wear a veil, except when I was walking down the aisle and actually taking the vows. I didn't accept the concept of pushing back the veil to reveal the face of the blushing bride. I had a chiffon dress that covered a spaghetti strap evening dress. That was what my bridesmaid dress looked like. So I took off the overblouse so that I could go to the cocktail hour. And then I put it back on over the spaghetti strap gown and walk down the aisle. You've heard of bridezillas who micromanage every detail of their weddings, but I was on the opposite end of the spectrum. Simply put, I was the unbride. One of the reasons I was so uninvolved with the details of the wedding was that I was in law school. When we talked about a wedding date, I told Nick that we had to marry either before or after my licensing exam, the bar exam. But not the same year. I just couldn't handle thinking about both. Since after the exam would have been a very prolonged engagement, we went for before the exam. So that meant I was still a student with my nose buried in law books and very minimally interested in planning a wedding. I saw the wedding as a big celebration, a party, not the fulfillment of a girlhood dream. I think that my perspective was appropriate, although not everyone agreed. Now, the title of Chapter 3 is Pepto-Bismol in the Wedding Photo. Like everything else we did for that wedding, the photography was low budget. We asked a friend, who is a photographer, but not a wedding photographer, mind you, to take our wedding photos. Even the most amateur photographer should have noticed when taking the pictures in the bridal suite with my bouquet on a little table in front of a mirror that there was a jar of Tylenol and a bottle of Pepto-Bismol on that little table. Nick and I recently celebrated our 40th anniversary. A friend who had helped me edit the photos for the book had access to that picture, and she made it into an anniversary card for us. After 40 years of marriage, the Pepto-Bismol and Tylenol were even more meaningful. So, marriage is a union of two people. A wedding is the celebration of the union. The problem comes when the celebration overshadows the marriage union. One of our friends likes to say, the bigger the wedding, the sooner the divorce. Well, with divorce in America being as easy as 6 months of irreconcilable differences, people should think twice before having a lavish wedding. Do any of you remember The Father of the Bride with Steve Martin? It was a 1991 movie, which was actually a remake of a 1950s classic. I still remember the wedding extravagances, and the one that stands out in my mind, it was a backyard wedding, and the wedding planner had rented a flock of swans to walk around the yard. That's the picture that stood out in my mind when I was writing this blog. So a wedding planner priced out what that wedding would have cost and came up with the figure of $250,000 in 1991. So I don't know whether you've ever used this little app, but you can put that figure into an inflation calculator, the date and the figure, and put what would that be in 2020, and my calculator came up with the fact that it would be a $470,000 wedding today. There has to be a better thing to spend money on. Now, some people like to make a statement with a wedding. They get married and doing their favorite activity, like the skydiving bride and groom. Some people are having destination weddings to get away from this traditional reception hall. Many people just elope. With the cost of receptions these days, that idea is sounding better and better. Some couples marry civilly because they have legal reasons to need to be married. Could be insurance, immigration status, taxes. And then they have a reception at a later date when it's convenient or when they can afford it. The most important point is that the bride and groom should feel that the ceremony is special and meaningful to them. So while I was writing this, I decided to look for the wedding vows that we wrote ourselves. I had them in the back of our wedding album, so I took out the album and I flipped through it. And you know what? I looked at the photographs and we were beaming with happiness. And everyone looked like they were having a fun time, despite the fact that I am describing the tackiest wedding of all time. But we were happy. Now, I came to the vows. I found them in the back. And they were kind of sweet. It was, you know, will you, Nick, and will you, Linda, take Nick as your partner, friend, and lover through the expected as well as yet unforeseen joys and sorrows of your lives? I think that captures the essence of marriage. You have to be partners in so many things, in finances, in ownership, in parenting. And you have to remain each other's best friends. And the biggest challenge of all, keeping the romance alive as lovers for life. Remember, one partner more than a celibate monk. All right, so the sanctity of the marriage can be lost in the ludicrous accoutrements and the almost unavoidable disagreements in the wedding planning. Now, for my wedding, the worst part was religious strife. Now, my husband and I wanted a minister to marry us, but my parents insisted on having a rabbi there. So I found a rabbi in the phone book. Does anyone remember the Yellow Pages? I don't know what heading I looked under, but I found a rabbi in the Yellow Pages. I should have been suspicious that he agreed to officiate alongside a minister. No questions asked. A month later, after our wedding, we were at my girlfriend's wedding. And that same officiator was officiating wearing a priest's collar. Hey, the officiation was legitimate, but we felt scammed. I never told my parents that our rent-a-rabbi was also an itinerant priest. We tied the knot, and our marriage was duly registered in the state of New York. I don't know whether you've seen this new trend of couples having friends and relatives become licensed to officiate to perform their wedding ceremonies. My daughter actually officiated my son's wedding, and that was such a peak moment, so heartwarming for me as a parent to sit there and watch my daughter officiating the ceremony of my son and his wife. I had to be careful how I told people about it. I had to avoid saying my daughter married my son, because the first time I said that, the look on the person's face said, oh, wait, what I meant to say was that my daughter officiated at my son's wedding. Now, after the nuptials comes the honeymoon. 40 Years of PMS began as a collection of essays entitled Life with Nick. I wrote them because humor helped me keep my sanity. The honeymoon was one of the original essays. I didn't choose a destination with heart-shaped tubs or waiters serving us pina coladas poolside. We planned an ambitious trip to Greece with island hopping and a bus trip into the mountains to where the first Olympics were held. The trip began with a packing fiasco. Nick didn't know how to pack for an 11-day trip that required clothing for formal dining all the way to beachwear. I refused to pack for him because I was clinging to some feminist values. When we arrived in the hotel, he, I have to put this in quote, unpacked, quote unquote. Basically, he had thrown some dirty clothes into a suitcase. I actually hand washed a shirt and shorts for him to wear for the first day of our tour. The island hopping was not a luxury either. We had bunk beds on our honeymoon in a cramped cabin of a ship, and I was seasick a good part of the time. One of the islands we visited was Santorini. You may have seen pictures of this island. You may know it. It's gorgeous, on sitting on top of a mountain, whitewashed buildings, blue sea. And there's this long path up the mountain, and the tourists take mules up this path. I took one look at these overheated, overworked mules and decided that I wasn't going to ride up on a mule. I would walk up. Now, the mules were not happy with me walking up on their path. I ended up being pinned against the wall a number of times. They were going to the bathroom. They were not at all appreciative that I was sparing them one ride. Anyway, then came the bus tour. And things being what they were, the bus company went on strike. So our tour guide had to hire a strike breaker to take us in a dilapidated bus with exhaust fumes seeping into the interior. Again, I mentioned the motion sickness. We were rounding hairpin curves with exhaust fumes, and I was experiencing death at every turn. There were lots of memorable moments, and I still enjoy thinking about them, but I have to look back and laugh at these memories. I learned a lot about my husband on that trip. A honeymoon is kind of like quarantine now that I've been through quarantine. You're thrown together without other influences for a week or two and getting to know you. Here's a passage you might enjoy from the honeymoon. It describes the night of the captain's dinner. There were white caps on the Aegean Sea causing my stomach to be as turbulent as the water. Quote, I was managing reasonably well with the courses until they served the dessert. Flaming Cherries Jubilee. I staggered towards the door without the assistance of Nick, who was fixated on his plate. A waiter came to my assistance and helped me out, eager to avoid any unpleasantness in the dining room. When I glimpsed back from the doorway, I saw Nick pulling my Cherries Jubilee in front of him. End of quote. The lesson I learned was that Cherry's Jubilee prevails over chivalry. So, as I've told you, that there at the end of the book, there are talking points about each chapter. So this blog was about chapter 3. And the talking points are how your mate proposed to you, or maybe I should say, or you proposed to him. A wedding snafu. Your honeymoon's worst moment. Once again, I encourage you to form a sharing group to talk about life passages. Episode 4 is about making my husband's bachelor house into a suitable home to raise a family, which required for me to be a magician. Tune in for the next broadcast. It will be Sunday, June 28 at 5 o'clock. I'm skipping next week, the 21st. It's Father's Day, and I don't want to say rude things about my husband on Father's Day. So take care of yourselves until then. I'd love to hear where you're listening from. You can always put fun comments on the 40 Years of PMS Facebook page. It's spelled out 40, not the number, so F-O-R-T-Y, 40 Years of PMS. Go to the Facebook page. Write some fun comments, share your thoughts, and just take care. You'll hear me on Sunday, June 28th, and stay well until then.